right, welcome to the latest edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Excited to be back. What number are we on, Jason?
Seven.
We've made it seven episodes. We have not been canceled. We are still here. People are still listening.
Thanks, Burl.
Still going.
Tickle, pickle.
That's not going away, is it?
I think it will.
At some point, it probably needs to. But we have a really special episode. I'm excited about this one. We're kind of going down the line right now as we get closer to Election Day. So make sure that everyone, we need to be informed voters. We all need to be informed and understand what we're doing when we go to the polls. Today's a perfect day to do that. So we are going to talk charter amendments. Who's excited?
Woohoo!
I am.
Sherry Coolidge is with us. She's back because she knows all about this stuff. And actually, this is gaining quite a bit of traction as a really interesting conversation and one that's super important. I want to also mention we're going to have Catherine Nero here later in our interview segment, who's doing Facebook Lives with us now. She's awesome. We're going to talk a lot about Memphis.
Looking forward to that.
I love Memphis.
Glad to have Sherry.
So make sure you keep it locked. We're going to get to her later. But first, main topic, charter amendments. And issue 10 and 11 are the big ones here, where it's about how long council members are going to – how long their terms are going to be, right? But there's two of them that both say different things. And so if you vote one win, if they both win, like this, how can this happen? And is this the most Cincinnati thing ever?
Well, first of all, like, can you just break? It is the most Cincinnati thing ever.
Like, we're going to have two of these?
Like, issue 10, issue 11, issue 59, issue 3100.
So
like, these can make you glaze over.
What are these? People aren't calling these issues like 10 and 11 yet, I don't think. I keep hearing people talk about charter amendments.
Yeah.
With an S at the end, because there's a lot of them. There's not just these council term ones. Today we're going to focus on how long council should serve. I think Jason might have some opinions on that, and I don't, but I can tell you all about them.
Yes.
Why they're good and bad. But there's a bunch of charter amendments this time. And so, you know, this summer they wanted to make a bunch of changes to the charter and the council, like putting ideas to voters in November. So that's how it kind of came about. And we have two competing plans for how long council should serve. Should we go back to two-year terms, which we had for a very long time?
Issue 10.
Or should we stagger the four-year terms like we have now?
Issue 11.
And, you know, they both have supporters and detractors. Two-year terms, though, has a money campaign behind it. And some very powerful people, which they kind of is coming out of at the last minute.
Nice scoop by me last week.
Yeah, totally.
So hold on a second. So the staggered four-year terms would be the top half. How would they determine how this works in the beginning? Like, who gets them staggered when they were to start doing that? How does that work?
So two times ago now, we changed to four-year terms. And this was a huge conversation in the city. There was a charter review task force committee, which I know glaze over, but it was a lot of important work. The biggest community leaders served. They had committees. They met like for over a year. Like, it was council terms. Like, should we have a strong mayor? All these different things about our city government. And they did a big review. And it was just kind of like womp womp. Like, after that, there weren't any big changes, but we did go to four-year council terms, and nobody really knew what that was going to mean. And kind of quickly into it, people were like, "This is a long time."
Yeah,
and that was pushed by Lori Quinlivan, who was on council at the time, a progressive Democrat. And it seemed to be that the progressives were really behind the four-year terms. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I mean, and the premise there was two-year terms, which we had for a long time. It was like everybody's like campaigning all the time and fundraising all the time instead of thinking about governing.
Right.
So that it seemed on its face like.
But accountability is an issue when you're in there for that long. Is that they're, you know, it's when you got 4 years.
Well, accountability and community response. Because what does campaigning all the time mean? Oh, going to community councils, going door to door, talking to people, seeing what they want to hear. And, you know, I'm hearing from some of these community councils, like, you know, they haven't seen. We had the politics Facebook page happy hour last week. Huge turnout. I had people say, I haven't seen a council member in years.
Really?
That was never the case before. Always sometime in the past 2 years, someone had seen a council member.
Yeah.
And so that was hearing from real people who just showed up there who are interested in politics. Kind of that was their take on it.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, okay, should we keep these 4 years? And some, and Greg Lansman, his idea is to stagger them with the idea behind it being experience, right? Because now we have 4 year terms and we have 6 people term limited out. So we'll only have if the 3 were to be elected, it's like, it's not a balanced council. It's 6 new members. Then you would kind of get this turnover all the time.
What do most local governments do in Ohio? I mean, what's like a is there a standard, or are they all different? Do you know?
Greg Lansman is saying 4 year staggered is the norm.
Yeah.
I haven't researched it too much myself, but going back to the Charter Review Task Force Committee, they looked, I can remember this idea. A lot of places do this. They do districts. They do half at large, because we do all at large. They do half at large and half district, which kind of gives your smaller communities a bigger voice. I mean, we tend, if you look at our council members, the neighborhoods you hear are the same neighborhoods. Oakley, Hyde Park, our wealthy communities, where there's power. And where, North Avondale.
We haven't had a council member from the west side. And when I'm talking about the west, I'm talking about Westwood, the Price Hills. No one from there since Greg Harris in 2009, and he was appointed.
That was always shocking to me, is that there's no, like, there should be a representative of every area. I mean, that how can you sell this as a true representative democracy, so to speak, if not everyone's really represented at all? Or are we just all saying we're all Cincinnati?
To me, that has been a huge issue in City Hall. And if you go to these community councils, there's very different issues with the West Side, what they care about, or what our poorer communities care about.
Our city is very much neighborhood-based, and we should recognize that as a city, is that we are so provincial.
So that was something that really came out of that task force, that's like a good idea. But it never went anywhere, and it's not one of the ideas being proposed now. The way things came to the ballot and to voters this time is just what council voted to put to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like not every idea there ever was. It's just the things that they want and they had the votes for.
I really like the idea, and I know it's been tried before, is the idea of districts, because I think – I think you get better representation of the city. I feel like probably racially, politically, and like who wouldn't want that? Like a more diverse council, or potentially more diverse council. And here's why I think it would be a good thing to have districts. So an example is this FC Cincinnati Stadium issue that was such a hot button issue earlier this year in the West End. There was so much like, who's leading this? Who's in charge? There was a lot of like, just, different factions of people trying to have their say. And to me, if you were to have districts, you would have an already built in elected official accountable to the people at City Hall, who is your point person if you live in that specific neighborhood. Now, it wouldn't be just West End. It'd be each district would be, a handful of neighborhoods. But to me, to have someone, championing your neighborhood on a major project like that, whether you're before it or against it, whatever your ear is to the ground, what your neighborhood, your citizens want, to me is a good thing.
Something that emerged from that conversation that was so fascinating to me is we have these community councils, and they are the voice of the neighborhoods, and they need to weigh in on all the projects. But if council doesn't want to listen to them, They have no power.
That was the crazy thing, because I, as someone who lives in Oakley, and the whole stadium thing was happening, and Oakley Community Council was like discussing it, and like FC Cincinnati was showing up there. I said, but it doesn't matter, because they anything they say means jack squat at these. They can choose to listen to them or not. That's crazy. So why do they even have them outside of just a place to talk about stuff?
Well, it's more like just to weigh in, I suppose.
Well, I understand that.
And to be fair,
that,
the West End did have a voice and they did weigh in. But in the end, you know, council said, you know, we have to do what's best for the city.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was to put the stadium in the West End.
But there was no one at City Hall who was really representing the West End's best interest.
Right.
Or the West End's interest.
Tamiya and Wendell.
They were. I'm just saying, what I'm saying is that you have, as a district representative, you would have that. But yeah, and I'm not saying anything like against Tamiya and Wendell were both very much bringing those concerns to City Hall.
But they have to take that up, and you don't know that someone's always going to be there to take that up for you, wherever you live, you know. 52-member council, every neighborhood. Ooh. How about that?
Are you trying to kill me?
I'm trying to kill you.
When I poll council, nine's plenty.
Yeah, exactly.
So we got...
But districts are not on the ballot, right? I mean, that's not a thing that's...
So it's been tried
before. Talking about terms.
I believe it's been tried before. It wasn't there... Oh, you know what? There was a behind-the-scenes effort to try to gauge interest in it, and there wasn't any potential there.
Well, I'm
for
sure
momentum.
The people in there right now don't want it.
Well,
this was like a decade ago.
You know what
ago.
They say the problem with that is? How do you choose the districts? And then some people are like, well, we have five police districts, but then they're not equal in size. And then it's like, who's going to draw a district map? And you do kind of go down that rabbit hole.
That was part of the issue.
You know, some things that are good for our city don't necessarily have to be easy.
No, I mean, sometimes you just got to draw it up.
Well, all this stuff is hard. I mean, governing is hard.
Mm-hmm.
But if
it's in the best interest of the city to have districts and have everyone truly feel represented, everybody needs to sit down, suck it up, and do it. Right?
Yeah. So we got 2-year terms on the ballot.
You don't want a staggered 4-year.
Right, we need to focus on what's actually being voted on. You're right. I mean, so Jason, you have an opinion on this. Can you opine on what you think is?
So I just think that 4-year terms have been a total failure. They started in 2013. And it just, you know, tell me what council has accomplished other than fighting since 2013 when John Cranley was elected mayor. And then the first 4-year term, we're now in the second 4-year term.
You think they're directly related?
Partially because, and it goes back to what Cherry, you guys were talking about earlier, is you get sucked into the bubble. You get sucked into the bubble of City Hall, or, you know, you see it in Washington. You get sucked into the bubble of Washington or whatever government. Building or agency that you're in. To me, the 2-year term, it had been in place since 1927. Was it really broken? I don't think it was broken, was it?
Well, I think, you know, this was just a big look at the charter to try and, you know, do it. And so council terms came out of that, just that bigger look. Nobody was like, oh, council terms are broken. We need to look at them. It was like, we need to look at the whole charter, and it came out of that.
So what's happened then? I'd be totally fine with 4 years if they would have accomplished more than a bunch of fighting over the streetcar, over every single project that comes up. You know, it really boils down to this friction between progressives and more, you know, conservatives aren't the right word, but more moderates. And that's what it's almost like on a big scale, you have that battle going on in this city overall, is that as the city has gone more blue or trended more left, you still have a faction of people who are fighting for the middle or for the right. And so we see that happening at City Hall, and that's ultimately not been good.
The staggered 4-year people, though, would say staggering the 4 years does give you a chance to vote out half the council every 2 years. And so that's like an argument for it. Well, the argument for it is that it lets people – have 4-year terms to focus on bigger projects and getting something really like these big ideas
done. What have they
done?
They didn't do crap in the first 4 years.
Personalities? Is that who we elected?
Right.
Or is that?
Well, yeah, no, that's a very good point.
Terms.
I mean, yeah. Am I being short sighted and saying, oh,
it's a small sample
size?
Am
I judging it on just 4 years? It is a small sample size. I don't know. I thought the 2-year terms worked, and you're more accountable to the people, or at least ideally you are. And, I mean, Congress has every 2 years. The State House has every 2 years.
And all the time you do hear in City Hall, like, if we're making these decisions, you hear that people would be like, you know, well, we wouldn't be fighting over Harry Black about whether to fire him if there was an election next year. But in the case of that, there was an election in 3 years, and people felt like
No, we could drag this out.
We could drag this out and do whatever.
It's a great example.
The text messages too, right? Like you could do something like that, and then there's 3 years for it to be done with, and people. But there's accountability with 2 year terms. There's accountability immediately.
Is there a problem to? Yeah. I mean, is there really a problem with trying to get big projects done in a smaller time frame? Or do, you know, I mean, I guess maybe it just takes that long. Or do you feel like this will stop big projects from getting done, or maybe expedite them?
I don't think it would stop them from getting done, but I'm just saying there. I can see an argument for that. Because if you, let's look at Liberty Street calming. It's a huge topic right now. That is something that's been 5 years in the works, at least. And whether you agree with it or not, and there's changes now, soccer stadiums, whatever, that has its own issues. But there are council members on there now who understand the issues of Liberty Street. It's not new council members. It's like some these people have history with Liberty Street, history with a neighborhood, history with public hearings on the matter and public meetings. And so that's a 4 year term kind of thing.
Right. So right now you have an interesting group of folks, a very bipartisan group of folks who are pushing this 2 year terms to get it back to 2 year terms. Some of the same people were fighting to keep the 2 year terms back in 2012. So you have, you know, Jeff Birdings, former councilman, FC Cincinnati president, of course, Christopher Smitherman, David Mann, Amy Murray.
Does anybody on current Charlie council Lucan, want Mallory. It to change to two? Is the current?
Oh, yeah.
Smitherman. Christopher Smitherman's that he pushed the 2 years. He was going to do a ballot initiative. If council wasn't going to do it, he was just going to get the signatures and go out and do it. But and council did agree to do it.
David Mann is also for two years, and so is Amy Murray. I don't know where Jeff Pastor is on it, but. So those are at least a handful of people inside. You got Mark Mallory, Charlie Lucan on the outside, the business community,
all
the chamber,
2 years.
The charter committee, all saying 2 years. So you've got a very broad and diverse politically group of people there.
And to me, the interesting thing is, because I wrote primers on all of these, and you can find them on Cincinnati.com, put in the issue charter amendment or the issues number if you want to see the pros and cons. When you're going to the voting booth, because there's a lot of them and they're complicated.
Here's the thing about these two issues. And I want to know, is there a sense, or can you ever have a sense with something like this, how it's going to go on election day, or is there a push, or is it just because there's money behind one that it'll go? Do you have much of a sense about that? Or
money matters.
That money will matter.
Especially in something like this, money is going to matter. Because, you know, again, you can glaze over, wonk out, and you see issue this, issue that. But when you have someone out there defining them, and that's what this campaign is, you know, hoping to do. They're what I think they said almost pump like $200,000 into it. That's quite a bit of money when you look at it. There's only 3 more weeks left until election.
Yeah.
So when I was putting these all together, we're looking at the supporters. These supporters have seen both. For a long time. Like, these are our good governance groups, and they're the ones pushing for 2 year. There's no groups that are like staggered 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. You know, there's some people are not against them, but there's no one like really pushing for it or saying like this is the best idea. People who have watched city council for years and have a stake in the game and are concerned about our city and our you know, officials, parties. They're 2 year term people.
Yeah. So as the potentially the question is, so 10 would probably have more votes than 11 if you follow the money, right? As far as winning, if they both said yes, I'm under this. If they both win, right? So if they both win, probably if you follow the money, 10 would probably have more votes. So is the question then, will either of them pass? To find out whether anything changes. Is that where it probably ends up if you follow the money?
I think so. It's hard to imagine someone walking into a voting booth. People are used to 2 year terms, and I think they'll be familiar with them. And then, of course, we have 4 year terms now, and like, okay, that's what we have now. It's hard to imagine someone's like, staggered 4 year is better. Like, it's hard, I think, to get that message across about why that's a good idea, especially with not a campaign behind it.
Yeah, and then especially also with this other thing on the ballot as well. So, you know, like let's just say staggered 4 years was on there alone right now.
It would have a better chance.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it also it would be so much easier to communicate what does this mean? What are the pros? What are the cons?
Because 2 years gives you accountability and the shorter terms, whereas the staggered is just about accountability.
Yeah. Very, it's all very interesting. I do want to point out, because people that were listening last week when we talked about issue one, there was a joint press conference just this week where we saw crossover again, where now it was maybe are we starting to see the tide turn on that as we see crossover again towards No on issue one? We hadn't seen much of that. But now, again, it was Dieters was in on that press conference. A number of people.
Yeah, it was county elected officials, the coroner Sam Marco was a Democrat, Sheriff Neal, Democrat.
We were just talking last week about how it had been Republican. Very much down party lines, and so the only crossover that I've noticed has been from Democrats coming over to what would be the Republican side of the No on issue one now.
You know, issue one's going to be interesting because if you read the ballot language, it sounds like a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the argument against it is not that it's not a good thing. It's that there's other better things that could be.
That this would be a bad law. That their argument is they already do all of this stuff basically here that you're trying to change it to, but you're going to make it harder to do. The stuff that you're trying to do, we're already doing it, and you're going to make it harder for us to do what we're already doing.
So it's the ballot language does make it seem like a good thing. If you walk in blind and you don't know what you're voting for and you're reading it, and you're like, well, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. But I'm just but when we heard from the press conference, it was like, not that we don't need to do these things, but the message has been there might be a better plan.
This just hit me. You were talking about the crossover. Newt Gingrich just came out in favor of issue one.
Newt Gingrich?
Yeah. Former speaker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm aware.
That just shows because there's big money behind this. They are coming in. Jesse explained this all last week. I listened to every word because, honestly, I've been following along, but I knew Jesse knew all about it, and I listened to your podcast specifically because I wanted to hear what she had to say about it because she knows the ins and outs. So please, if you have any questions about issue one, go back and listen to last week's. Plus, Jason's.
At Jay Ballmer on Twitter.
And that, too.
Yes.
Sherry, you were at the changing the subject quite a bit. Sherry, you were at the Trump rally on Friday. How'd that go? How was that?
You know, you never know what you're going to find at a rally like that. We found 8,000 people, right? I believe that was the crowd was gigantic. I mean, they said it was going to seat 3,000.
No, there's no way. There had to have been 8,000 people there.
There was a lot member when, you know, Trump was elected and they're like, oh, he overestimates the size of his crowd and gets less people than that. That was not the case in Warren County. There was way more people than we expected. They were packed in there. And these people, they came to hear the president. They came to support Brett Kavanaugh. This was a moment in our time where people really wanted to have their voice heard, I feel like.
How did it compare to the last time he was here?
So the last time he was here, you were in Blue Ash, Sherry, when he was here in
that was a smaller
February, but was that wasn't a political rally? That was he was here as
touting small business and what they're doing for.
He was here
business.
As the quote president. So he was here on the official side. Then this was a political rally on Friday night.
Absolutely. I mean, I felt like the election was next year or in November. Like that was the kind of rally that it was.
It was cold and rainy, and the energy. In that show arena at the Warren County Fairgrounds was palpable, and I was actually a little surprised by it that it was.
People waited overnight.
I was a little surprised. I mean, you know, we know like he has a fervent following, but just on an off presidential year, for him to have that kind of a crowd to turn out, and them to be that lively, was I don't know. I thought it. Maybe I'm just too far sucked into the bubble.
No, but I agree because speaking of being in like a political bubble, like I thought we were going to like a Shabbat rally, right? Mm-hmm. I thought this was about the Shabbat AFTAB race, but this was a Trump rally. This seemed like an election rally, and it was about really electing Republicans like down the ticket. It became really a lot more about the governor's race than it did about Shabbat and Pure Vault.
And his message throughout was tell your friends, get out and vote, tell your friends. I think at one point he even said something like, tell your neighbor, tell your coworker. I mean, so he was very much hammering that we really need you here in a few weeks, folks. So, I mean, that was a message that I think he made clear in that rally.
Interesting. Well, lots going on. We're only – what are we down to? What's our day count till Election Day? We're like, what are we at?
Three weeks. So.
Why aren't we keeping that number at our desk? I feel like we should. We need some sort of
countdown.
A little
digital.
Flip calendar.
I'm going to get Burl to get us a digital sign or something.
A countdown
maybe.
One.
Yeah.
Oh, a digital. Well, I like the old school flip calendars, though. Maybe it could even be like a like one of those Far Side calendars, but it has the number of days to the election on it. I love Far Side.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of countdowns, don't forget, no matter what happens with council terms, we have 3 more years of this council.
Yeah. Right.
So this whole thing, Sherry, these issues, no matter what, it wouldn't kick in until 2021, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
2021 is when whatever changes would start over, so... There you go. There you have it. You have the inside scoop. Sherry Coolidge, thank you for joining us.
Love it.
Great to have you on here. I'm positive we will have you back as we get closer. I'm excited to when we get to go into the aftermath.
Can I ask Sherry one more question?
The election.
I'm going to ask one more question.
Well, then I have a question.
You are notorious at this. This is what Jason does. As soon as I start to wrap up a segment, Jason likes to go, I've got another question. And we have to keep going on. You know, that's just your thing. I feel like that should be its own segment in itself as Paul wraps up and Jason decides we're not done yet.
Imagine sitting next to him.
Yeah.
His wife and my husband are like, where are you guys? We're still at work.
Oh, yeah. You weren't here last week. My wife called, and I was in the middle of deadline or something, and I was it was not good.
You're not a phone slammer,
Bethany.
Are you?
No. Bethany, I understand.
Not anymore, I'm not, because I can't slam the iPhone.
Just throw it.
But I was a phone slammer back when you used
the I totally see you as a phone slammer for sure.
Never broken one, for the record.
Don't be a phone slammer.
This is a lighthearted question. Have you eaten at any good restaurants in the past week?
I have.
Where?
We went to Red Feather before we went to Pops. Alex and I went. Red Feather is my new
Red
favorite.
Red Feather is so good.
Is it like Red Robin?
Do I seem like a Red Robin kind of girl to you, Jason?
Red Feather and Red Robin, very similar.
Well, Robins have feathers.
Yeah, they're very similar.
Red Feather and Oakley, it's like amazing service.
I don't go to the east side.
They have great. Yes, you do. You talked about it last week. You got all mad about the parking.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Red Feather has great. Cocktails. Their bar is fantastic.
They do. Dirty martini. They always start
I
that
like
there.
Clean martinis, so.
Yeah.
I don't like any martinis. I hate liquor.
You're the type.
I only drink, if I drink an alcoholic beverage, I just drink beer. I hate wine. I hate liquor.
All right. So you want to know a secret about me when I go out to eat?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm like, I'm always on a diet. If you know me, everybody knows that. Like, that's my weekday. That's how I roll. When I go out to dinner, Alex lets me get all the desserts.
Alex Coolidge, by the way, is Sherry Coolidge's husband, who also is a reporter here, covers Procter & Gamble.
All the desserts?
Uh-huh.
Like you order multiple desserts?
Yes.
At a single dinner?
Uh-huh, and then I eat all of them.
So the Red Roost? This place, the Red Roost?
Red Feather.
Oh, Red Feather, sorry.
It's right by Madtree, people who know where Madtree is.
Oh, it's by Madtree.
Yeah, it's down on that end, Madison.
So a good place?
Yeah.
It's
was that where that question was going? Because I've been
rhapsodizing
about it.
I know you're always out and about, and this is
Jason
is about
there and he's like, oh, Paul's about to wrap up. I don't have anything. How am I?
This is about Cincinnati. So, and we talk a lot about restaurants on here.
Neighborhoods. This is one thing I will say. We talk about our neighborhoods, and we had a very serious conversation about them. Our neighborhoods have great restaurants. If you East Price Hill, Somme, Alex and I were between going to Somme over there, and there was a lot of good choices just in our neighborhoods. We can get stuck downtown because we work down here, but our neighborhoods, they have great choices. And these days they have great beer gardens too, but that's probably a conversation for a different day.
Red Robin.
On that note, thank you, Sherry, for coming. Let's get out of here. Let's go, Catherine Nero. It's going to be interview time here on TSC. All right, interview time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm excited about this one.
I can tell.
We do. I feel like we try to do this, but we have each other to talk to. Catherine Nero, you talk to yourself.
I know.
In the mornings.
And that is a problem. I've been accused of doing that for years, and now I'm getting paid for it. How about that?
Yeah. Honestly, hey, first of all, great to have you here at the
Team
Inquirer.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. I mean, you've been here in the city talking to people forever, but this
apparently
is like a
since
whole
you
different...
were in high school.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. I graduated in 99 and you started here in the city not long after that.
In 98. I was here in 98.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it was this... Well, first of all, I mean, you've been here for a long time. You were over at WCPO. Mm-hmm. And how odd is it to try and reimagine your career? Because this is a different... Mm-hmm. This is kind of a whole different deal here with you're doing these Facebook videos here every morning here with us.
Yeah, and if you had said 4 years ago, okay, what you're going to be doing is talking to your cell phone on Facebook, I would have thought you were nuts. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, things are completely different. The way we consume news is different. The way I consume news now that I'm not in a, you know, in a TV newsroom every single day, it's totally different. So when the Inquirer came to me with this opportunity to do Facebook Lives, it's really fun. Yeah, I need somebody to talk to, though, other than my crazy head. But, I mean, yeah. It's great to talk to people, you know, to that immediate interaction where people are commenting and saying hello or telling you something that you didn't know. It's just, it's great. Because that's the one thing that's missing in TV is you're talking at people. There's not a conversation going on. And so it's great to have that. It's been fun.
What are you, 2 weeks in now?
Yes, two weeks in. Yeah, it's my third week.
This is your third week, yeah. How's it going? I mean... Are you liking it?
I do. I like it.
You're doing it at 10 o'clock every morning,
10
right?
o'clock every morning That's on the Inquirer
really
Facebook
late
page.
For you.
I know. I'm like, is it nap time yet? it was late for me in my old life, but it actually works out really well because, you know, that time was kind of, we picked it because, you know, people get up in the morning and they're busy, get their kids to school, drive to work, whatever. And then there's a little bit of lull sometimes, you know, maybe not tell your employers that, but there's a little bit of a, hey, what do we do now? And we're finding that that's the kind of time that people, you know, can come together in front of a phone or a laptop and talk fun stuff. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, it's a really cool concept. And if you want to get a chance, make sure you head over. Just follow us on Facebook and you'll see it there in the morning. So you can watch the archived edition as they pop up too.
10 a.m. Monday through Thursday.
You got it. Yeah. You got it.
And then your kids take over on Friday.
Yeah, listen, if I'm going to be unemployed, I got to get them to work. Listen, somebody's got to make some money in this house. So, what we've been doing this for years. And honestly, I started it just to kind of make myself learn how to edit and then also just to give them something to do. So we come up with, you know, 3, 4, or 5 things going on the weekend that they think are cool, that are good for families, and I make them do the story. And it's funny how every once in a while they're like, we don't want to do it. And then suddenly the camera comes out and they're like, we got it, Mom. Here we go. You know, so they're all about it. They enjoy it. And you can, it's fun to see them grow up over the years doing it too.
That's awesome. So now you're originally from Memphis, which we were just earlier sharing stories of. I worked in a very, very small dry county in Arkansas, which is considered almost Memphis area. What? How many times have you been to Graceland?
I used to work at Graceland.
You worked at Graceland?
Yeah, I was a tour guide.
You know my favorite part about Graceland, though, is the terrible souvenir shops like across the street?
You're talking about the non-Graceland official.
Non-Graceland official.
Yeah,
like
those are
all
terrible.
The souvenir shops that have popped up because there's nothing. It's weird if you've ever been there. It's in like a obscure, almost a neighborhood.
It's in Whitehaven area.
Whitehaven.
It's, yeah. It used to be the middle of nowhere. It used to be just a cornfield out there. But yeah, so when Elvis bought it, it was the 13.8 acres he bought it for a Dr. and Mrs. Thomas More. I could recite all of this for you. but anyway, it was nothing when he started there. Like, it was the middle of nowhere, and it has, you know, obviously become this giant tourist attraction, second most visited house in the United States behind the White House.
Wow.
But I loved working there. And I have always said this, that I think working at Graceland taught me more about television than anything I ever did, because Elvis Week, which is the anniversary of his death, is the middle of the summer. It's 1,010 degrees in Memphis, and people are lined up trying to get into the house. It's so busy, and it's so hot, and all we had to do was entertain these people. And it was, if you can entertain German tourists who speak about 8 words of English in 110 degree Memphis heat, you can talk about anything. So it was a great time.
Do you make it back to Memphis?
I do. My parents are still there, so we go back. I made my family go to Graceland a couple of years ago, my family here, so that was fun. And speaking
what
of
the
which,
kids think?
They thought it was cool because now the tour's on an iPad. The people like me doing the actual, you know, here's the dining room and where Elvis would eat his chicken and dumplings, that doesn't exist. Yeah. So they thought that was cool. And then they said what everybody else says, the house is so small. And it's not small, but it's just a regular house now. It was, you know, giant way back when. But now we've got McMansions, and so.
Can you recite your speech.
I can. My favorite one. Yes. Well, there's. I had to learn every room in every, like the Jungle Room. He recorded the better part of two albums there from Elvis Presley Boulevard, Memphis, Tennessee. I've got one great Elvis story. This is a super great one. I kicked Lisa Marie out of Graceland one time by accident. This is when she was married, not to Michael Jackson, but before that to Danny Keough. And she had two little kids. And at the time, Elvis's aunt lived in Graceland. Like while the tourists are going through, and that she would flip them off as they were coming
by.
Lived there, Miss Delta. And she was mean as a snake. And so she let Lisa Marie come in through this one entrance that only Miss Delta was supposed to use. Mm-hmm. So me being, you know, I've got my name tag on, so clearly I'm Johnny Law. I'm like, ma'am, I don't think you can come through there. And she was like, no, it's okay. I'm Lisa. And I said, I don't, it doesn't matter what your name is. This is for family only. And she goes, no, Lisa Marie. And by this point, I had gotten up close enough to her, and she looks just like Elvis. Mm. And I'm like, so sorry, ma'am, please. And she's like, it's okay. But I was like, I tried to kick her out of her own house, but it didn't work.
Oh, that's great. I could listen to Graceland and Elvis stories all day. I find the place just absolutely phenomenal.
It's one of a kind.
We don't need to continue to go
on. You sure?
Maybe that'll, I mean, like I said, it is our podcast. We could choose to do whatever the heck we want to. But,
so you've been here. You came 20 years ago, 98. Mm-hmm. Were you right out of Memphis State?
I had worked in Memphis a couple years at the ABC affiliate down there.
And you came in sport. You came. Mm-hmm. You were originally a sports reporter.
Yep. Yeah.
Were you a sports reporter in Memphis as well?
I was, okay. Yeah. Sports reporter and anchor there, and then came up here for the same job.
What was that like? I mean, you came here as a sports reporter. Do you remember what was going on in sports then? Was it exciting? Was it
shockingly, the Bengals were losing. I covered sports here, I think, 4 or 5 years, and I never once went on a winning Bengals trip. Never once.
Really?
It was a nightmare. I know. It's a shocker. But, yeah, the Reds were not great at that moment. The Bengals were not great. It's like when I left sports, everything kind of got better, so you're welcome. Yeah. Yeah. Cincinnati for that. But I, you know, at the time I was very familiar with UC, for example, being from Memphis, and I love college basketball. College football was the one thing that I was like, I missed from being in SEC country, you know. But everything else was, I'd never covered the NFL before I got here, really. We had the Titans in Memphis for a couple of years, which was totally weird. But so that was fun. It was fun to do. So I loved it here, and I just think that there's so much to learn in so many different teams and so many different, like, people are so passionate about it here. It was just great to see.
Did you think you were going to be in sports your entire career? Or what was?
Yeah, I think I did. Yeah. I did. And then, you know what happened? You marry a local. I don't know what I thought I was going to do. I think I thought I was going to come here and, after a couple of years, move to a different market.
Yeah.
And I love this city. And again, I met and married a guy from Covington. And so I didn't want to go anywhere. And at the time I was, you know, working weekends and newly married, and this opportunity came up to do the morning show. And I'm like, I don't know that that's really what I want to do. And they talked me into it, and I'm so glad they did, because weirdly, I think sports and morning TV is a kind of a, there's a similarity there in ad-libbing and having to kind of roll with punches and stuff. And but I enjoyed both of them equally.
When did you go to Good Morning Tri-State?
2002, yeah.
So in 2002 up until a couple months ago,
yeah,
you were getting up at what time?
1:40 a.m.
And you had to be in at the studio by
at
what time?
3, yeah.
So for 5 days a week, except for your vacations and when you had your kids.
Like, yeah. That was
You're getting up at 1:40 in the morning. Like.
Yeah, I was just saying last night, I am shocked that I was not hit by a drunk driver at some point.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like, there's hardly anybody on the roads. It's so weird. You get totally used to your commute having, you know, absolutely no traffic. But, you know, it's kind of nice getting up when it's quiet. You know what I mean? Like, it was silent. There's no noise in my house. I could do what I needed to get to do. And you know, sleep was at a premium. Don't get me wrong, but the way I looked at it, I was the one being put out by the sleep. I was the only one that really had to deal with that. It was better for everybody else. I get to get my kids off the bus and, you know, volunteer at their schools and stuff like that.
Did you ever oversleep?
I did. I did once or twice, but see, that's one of the reasons I got there at 3. Our show didn't start till 4:30, right. But I'm like, if I'm not there by this time, call me.
Okay.
But yeah, so I never like missed a show, but I was close once.
When did you go to sleep? Like, when did you decide, okay, I need 5 hours or 4 hours, and how did you make that determination?
I don't know. I went to sleep at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
But I took a 2-hour nap in the middle of the day.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like
that's my kind of life.
Well, and yeah, except when your next door neighbor's mowing his grass and you're like, it's 2. I need to sleep.
Don't you know I'm napping?
Yeah, how dare you on this beautiful summer day? You know, but so it wasn't ideal, but I kind of crammed it all in there. But it's nice getting like one chunk of sleep now, you know, it's kind of crazy.
What's it been like, your daughters, what do you say, 14 and
12.
12. Mm-hmm. So all they ever knew, their mom, when they wake up in the morning, you're on TV. They know you're on TV. That's where you're at.
Yeah. So my husband had the fun duty of getting two girls ready for school for, 6-7 years.
Have they adjusted to have mom at home in the morning?
Well, I think they have, you know, just because they've had to. But what's interesting is that, you know, I was never there for that morning routine and all of that. But it's, I told them, I'm like, you know, what if I'm really a nice person who doesn't yell all the time? Like, and we just don't know that because I've always been, you know, on 3 hours sleep. Right. And they're like, that's a great point. So I think I've been a little nicer. So that's good, right? But I've never had kids and not woken up at 1:40. That's what the crazy thing is until the last couple of months.
So I'm going to spring something on you.
Right.
What is your favorite meal in Cincinnati? Favorite individual single meals.
Okay.
At a restaurant, not like, you know, home cooking somewhere.
Okay.
Because you're from a food town, Memphis.
I am. Yeah. I am. I'm going to say, and I'm actually going there this Friday, Oriental Walk.
Really?
Yes, I love Oriental Walk. And see, I go all over the map on the Oriental Walk, but I do like General Wong's chicken, and I like their salmon there.
Wow.
Yeah, I do enjoy that.
You just don't hear that very often.
No,
yeah, that's delicious. It's one of my favorites. Yes.
All right. I like that. What else you got, Jason?
Got any good DJ stories for us?
Oh, not for publication. I'm so sorry.
I feel like
I love DJs. One of my all-time favorite.
He really
media people,
and everybody has a story.
Well, and what I always said about Denny Jansen could walk into a room full of you could pick the people, and he would have no idea. And he will walk up to somebody, and be like, "Hello, how are you? And how's your son? Isn't he in youth soccer?" Like, he knows everybody, every name, everything. And I've talked to him a couple times over the last couple of months too. He's been great, and
he's doing okay.
Oh yeah, I tell you, he's a landlord now. That's what's so funny. Can you imagine having Denny? But he really, though, one of the great people. Just and I mean, honestly, for me to be able to learn from Dennis Jansen and John Popovich, there's not two better people. It was unbelievable.
Man, nicest combo of two people you'll find anywhere for sure.
When I left the Post to go to, I went to the St. Paul Pioneer Press in Minnesota. He called me. He came to my going away thing. I mean, I didn't know him that well.
Uh-huh.
He came to my going away thing, bought me a beer, and then called me the next day, and we talked for like an hour on the phone.
That's amazing.
And it was just like,
it doesn't surprise
me. He's telling
at all.
Me stories, and I could just sit there and listen to him all day because he's just a great storyteller. And
I got married in 2000, and Denny could not go to the wedding. It was in Memphis. He flew down for the rehearsal dinner, made a speech, and flew back. It was awesome because he had some engagement. He had to go do something that he was like emceeing or something. And he had made, you know, told him a year in advance he'd do it. And so he was like, I can't come to the wedding. Can I come to the rehearsal dinner? And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. And he gave me an Elvis music box to bring it back full circle.
Boom. Look at you.
How about that?
Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. It was good to have you.
Thank you.
Good luck going back now to talking to yourself.
Awesome. Yeah, this will be a little hard.
I feel like it's easier when we can all talk together.
I agree completely.
When you master talking to yourself in the morning, there's really nothing else. Well, you and everyone out there in Facebook land.
There you go.
So Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. on the Inquirer's Facebook page.
Yes.
It's you and the entire internet.
Also streaming on Cincinnati.com. Or you can get to it from
absolutely
on Cincinnati.
Absolutely. It's up on the front of the site pretty much.
Can't get away from it.
Log on and love it.
That log on and love it. There you go. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
All right. Much thanks to Catherine Nero for joining us talking. I really could talk about Elvis and Graceland all day.
I couldn't.
It's just
not a big music guy.
Yeah,
especially old music.
You're not a big music guy.
No.
What?
You know what? You know what I hate. I don't hate any. Like, I can't stand the Beatles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hot takes.
One of the most overrated bands in the history of music. I can't stand them.
I mean, they did kind of change the face of music forever. Maybe you could argue that it would have eventually changed, but they were the ones that did change and like create rock and roll, kind of.
Good for them. I just can't stand their songs. I can't stand the sounds.
That's fair. I like the evolution of the Beatles. I don't like early Beatles, but I like the evolution of the Beatles. I think they were pretty incredible when you...
Really?
You like the Beatles. That's a really odd
You like
take.
The Beatles off the stage is what you like. I think that's what people like, the Beatles off the stage, because seriously, can people really like those songs?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I like their. I do, actually. I think they're great.
Kind of whiny.
Like the first 5 to 10 years, that their first 5 years or so, like that was old. But when they started doing drugs, it got good.
Well, that's probably why I don't like them, because I'm always about saying no to drugs. So.
Oh, right. I know. Just say no, kids.
I don't. I'm
just say no, kid. So do you like any old music?
No, not
Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, they're okay.
They're okay? Stones?
I do not like the Stones. It's probably because they play a Stones song right after the Trump rally every time, and it's just like I'm so sick of hearing them.
So, hold on. You don't...
I don't know what
is
I'm
there
saying.
Another,
I honestly, I don't
is
know what
there
I'm
another
saying.
40-year-old in America?
43.
40 plus, I mean, 40s is what I'm suggesting. Is there another 40-something in America who doesn't like the Beatles, the Stones, Led Zeppelin?
Let me take that back. I don't mind the Stones.
What, do you like the Eagles?
I don't mind the Eagles.
Of course.
I had a box set of the Eagles when I was in junior high.
See? Loves the Eagles, hates the Stones, Zeppelin, and the Beatles.
I don't hate Zeppelin
Get
either.
Get out of here. All right. Do you have... This is the opposite of a curmudgeon moment. Normally the curmudgeons were fighting, music in my day was better.
Well...
Just
not big into music,
not,
I guess.
Hot takes doesn't like music. What are your thoughts on food?
I'm not... Well, I'm sorry. Golly, Nids.
I don't like music. I mean,
I'm just not big into music. I don't go to concerts. I went to a U2 concert last summer of July 17. Okay. I probably hadn't been to a concert since the last U2 concert I went to, which was right after 9/11, so November of
2001. So U2 is your band.
I love U2.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I like U2.
It's not like I listen to them religiously all day long.
You just like them.
I do.
Well, that's fair. I like you too.
I like Big Head Todd and the Monsters too.
Yeah.
They're coming to the Madison.
You going to be there?
I think I'm going. It's a $20 ticket.
Boom. Look at you.
I'm not Johnny Thin Wallet or anything, but I mean, 20 bucks for a concert when you're not much into music, I'm okay with that.
I prefer concerts at venues like the Madison or 20th Century or Bogart's or whatever. You're smaller. I prefer smaller venues to going to US Bank or something like that.
Yeah.
They don't feel like real music to me, even if the band is huge.
I like AC/DC.
Man, hot musical takes from Jason Williams. Let's get to our That's a Cincinnati moments this week. I'll start off with mine.
This is the That's a Cincinnati moment of the week.
This is it.
This is it.
I mean, mine is pretty easy. Mine was kind of handed me on a silver platter. Is the most Cincinnati thing ever is for everyone to get all on board the Bengals and like start to be like, oh, you know, I'm not going to believe. No, I'm not. Oh, my God, they're going to win. They're going to win this game. And then, rah, Steelers. And everyone gets heartbroken the same way they always do whenever the Steelers come here. And so you walk out of the game, and it's like, okay, the Steelers broke their hearts again. Ben Roethlisberger broke their hearts again. Vontaze Burfict is being a jerk again. And a bunch of dudes are injured. Don't know how they're going to go forward again. It's like every... That is so Cincinnati how does it continually happen
rinse, repeat.
The same way?
Rinse and repeat.
It's and then everybody, here's what happens every single time these two teams play because there's a bunch of Pittsburgh people that follow me because I'll go on like the Steelers radio podcast every year. Yeah. And then, so they always are like, they come in my mentions. And so if I ever tweet anything about that game, the Steelers fans will come in and they'll start yelling, and the Bengals fans will come into my mentions on Twitter, and then they'll start yelling at the Steelers fans, and they all start fighting with each other, and that's my whole mentions just become Bengals and Steelers fans fighting with each other about what Vontaze Burfict did.
It's productive.
This is what I always feel like I have to apologize these weekends to people that I actually like ask real questions to me on Twitter. Like I can't find it because I can't go back through all that garbage, and I have no way to turn them off.
Sorry.
I just wish they could go find another corner of the internet.
First world problems.
Look, that's just my Cincinnati life.
It is your Cincinnati life. It's my Cincinnati. You should get a t-shirt that says that.
No, I
my
should.
Cincinnati life.
We should get that's a Cincinnati t-shirts.
We should.
I'll talk to Josh Sneed. We need to make this happen.
Does Josh Sneed do t-shirts?
He's Cincy shirts.
Oh, he is. Oh, I didn't know he was
that's
Cincy
him.
Shirts. Sorry.
Yeah. Josh Sneed is
Cincy shirts.
Sorry
for my lack of knowledge on music and t-shirts.
I mean,
so.
It's a pretty big local startup here in the city of Cincinnati. They have multiple brick and mortar stores now on top of their internet.
Cincy Shirts has a place in Hyde Park now too, right?
They do. And they have the one in OTR.
They did the Cincy Strong shirt.
They did.
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know that was Josh Sneed.
That
Sorry.
Is Josh Sneed. So we'll have to contact him and see if we can get some That's a Cincinnati shirts so we can sell two of them for him. One for you, one for me. And maybe our parents would buy one.
I think they did an Inquirer shirt, didn't they?
The Homage did.
Oh.
It was like a throwback to the original.
Who I just mentioned. We just mentioned the competition. I'm kidding. I like Homage, too. Yeah, I like Homage Cincy shirts.
Everyone can survive in this space.
You know what I like about Cincy shirts? They have great stickers. I like collecting stickers and put them on my cooler, my tailgating cooler.
Oh, yeah. You have a tailgating cooler?
I do.
When you go to Marshall?
Yeah, I do. And other events, like camping and stuff. I take the tailgating cooler.
What are some of your stickers? Like what? The man likes stickers. Hates music, loves stickers.
A lot of beer. I only put stickers on there of things that I like.
Okay.
So I've got stickers.
You're like a fifth grader with his trapper keeper.
Exactly. That's exactly. And it looks like that too. I mean, it's plastered with stickers. So I have the Cincinnati flag. Ohio flag.
Love the Cincinnati flag, actually.
I do, too.
I fly that a lot. I'm a flag guy.
Yeah, I have flag. I like flag. I got my Marshall flag flying right now.
Do you?
Yep.
I bought a royal wedding flag when that was going on. Like, it was, like, one of those that they were selling over in England. I bought one.
Really?
So that I could fly it for the 2 weeks prior to the wedding, because I just thought
that's
it was
cute.
Hysterical. The funny part about that is when I like to maybe get people to laugh a little bit when they walk by my house. But right after we did it, our neighbors, if you remember, it was in the vicinity of either 4th of July or something, put up all their America stuff. And
cool.
I felt like it was like a war. Like, they thought I was repping, because it does have the English flag on my,
boo.
My flag. When it was like, America! Like, I was like, oh my God, did I start like a neighborhood war? I didn't mean to. I just was trying to be funny about the royal wedding. Anyway, they're expecting now, so I thought about flying that flag again. But I'm not going to.
Got a lot of beer stickers on there.
So you want to hear 50 more?
50 West.
You want to hear more about
my 50 West beer sticker, Braxton.
I might fly the flag during baby watch when that starts.
Ooh. That was just announced yesterday, right?
It was.
Got some Vineyard Vine stickers on there.
I'm sure. So
Hilton Head.
Is this all you had to offer was your sticker collection, or did you have a curmudgeon moment this week?
I just had my curmudgeon moment.
Yeah.
About music, the Beatles.
So that was your thing? You planned to come here today and talk about how you don't like the Beatles.
Yeah, it's funny because I heard something about the Beatles on the radio this morning, and I was just like, oh yeah, and I was reminded of how much I can't stand the Beatles, and I'm like, I had something else lined up as my curmudgeon moment, but
you decided to go on that.
It can hold. It's not timely.
Okay.
But my Beatles thing was timely because I'm like,
really? Yeah. Complaining about the Beatles today, super timely. I mean, what? Paul McCartney just played the Austin City Limits Festival. So I guess that's the closest thing to timely we get.
Cool.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up then. Do you have any shout outs this week? Any former classmates or you know, any former coworkers or I guess we could just shout
out. You got any shout outs for any of your
former? Shout out Catherine Neer and Sherry Coolidge. That's one of my
shout outs. They were great today.
Appreciate
they
them were, joining us,
really
helping
good.
Us.
Appreciate their
Sherry loves our podcast.
She's very supportive, yes.
That's important. And it's great to have someone who really knows her stuff that can come in here and help keep us informed and not just ranting all the time.
Keep us in line.
Informed rants. That's what we do here. Informed rants.
So we have the informed rants, and then we have Catherine and Sherry in to, like, actually give you some substance.
Yeah, like,
so.
Yeah, like the pros, just, like, rein us in a little bit, exactly. Basically. So, anyway, thanks to them for joining us. That's insane. Remember, we post these every Wednesday, so keep coming back. We'll be back next Wednesday. Election Day right around the corner. We're going to try to keep these until we get to the election pretty centric, so you could be an informed voter. We want informed voters on local issues. That's what we're all about here. Local issues that affect you, keeping you informed.
I want to give one shout out. I do have a shout out.
You did it again.
I know.
You're doing it again.
You like this. You like this shout out.
Give every
shout
time out. I try to rap anything.
Give a shout out to the Cincinnati Bell Connector.
We didn't. You mentioned the streetcar earlier, but I didn't want to go derail us. You said fighting over the streetcar. And
that's right.
I didn't want to derail us in that moment. But you're shouting it out.
We had a So Cincinnati moment. It was touching.
Very touching.
Shout out to Cincinnati Bell Connector. Thanks for all you do.
In connecting us.
Off,
not on time. And very slowly.
You said that. Bye.